Discussions in this show should not be construed as specific recommendations or investment advice. You should always consult with an investment professional before making important investment decisions. Securities offered through J.W. Cole Financial, Inc., member FINRA, and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI, an SEC-registered investment advisor. 674 South College Avenue, Bloomington, Indiana. Hello, everyone. Welcome to The Big Show, Your Money with David Hayes. Doug Hughes is in the house today, the co-author, and along with myself, with today's Guide to Retirement Planning, a resource for adults ages 50 and over. And we're going to be talking about the retirement crisis in America and why people do what they do when it comes to money and how you can change those habits. So we'll be with Doug in just a few minutes. Let's talk a little bit about the news of the week. The IMF says the Greek exit is a possibility. Out of Reuters today, it said the head of the International Monetary Fund told a German newspaper that the Greek exit from the Eurozone was possible. A comprehensive solution to Greece's debt problems is very unlikely, they said, in the next few days. But that contradicts statements that the Greek officials, of course, have made, who said they believe they're close to a deal. It's like me dealing with my 14-year-old son. He thinks, you know, that everything's fine when everything's actually not. Hey, I got a couple emails this week from people who are on the General Motors retirement savings plan, and they're making some changes with their options. And basically, you know, all of these plans must go through an annual review to make sure that the funds that are in the plan are good funds, that they're not the most expensive, they're actually less expensive. And that's what GM has done. So I got a couple emails from people saying, hey, they're changing these funds up. Is there anything I need to do? Nah, just let those things map right over is what I told them, and that's what I would tell you. I think a lot of that comes from the Supreme Court ruling that just happened recently when a group sued the trustee of their 401k and said, hey, we had too expensive of funds in here. We should have had cheaper funds when given the alternatives. They took it all the way to the Supreme Court and won. So that's just some kickback that you'll start seeing across the board when it comes to 401k plans. Here's a question. Are you providing some financial support to your adult children, and has it hurt your retirement prospects? It seems that the wealthier you are, and this comes from a survey from the Pew Research Center, the greater the chances are you're going to lend a helping hand to your kids. In 2014, a survey revealed that 38% of American parents had given financial assistance to their grown children in the past 12 months, including 73% of higher income parents. The latest Bank of America USA Today Better Money Habits Millennium Report shows that 22% of 30 to 34-year-olds get financial help from their mom and dads. I just can't believe this. Earlier this year, a financial research firm, Hearts and Wallets, presented a poll of 5,500 U.S. households created, they're headed by baby boomers. The major finding, boomers who were not supporting their adult children were 2.5 times more likely to be fully retired than their peers. That's crazy. As I move on, researchers told MarketWatch, who put out this letter, that boomers who lent financial assistance to their grown children were 25% more likely to report heightened financial anxiety than the others. And then out of USA Today, I saw this, and I kept it. Over the weekend, more kids care for aging parents. You know, more Americans are providing personal and financial care to aging parents, often in tandem with assisting adult children, just like this I just reported. Again, according to the Pew Research Center, the research uncovered that there's a strong obligation that Americans feel to help their older parents. 3 out of 4 surveyed said they've actually feel it's a duty to provide financial help if needed. And according to Frank Birkensburg from the University of Pennsylvania, he says it's certainly good news that the family is alive and well in the U.S. And I found this interesting as I went through this article, that researchers found a strong cultural difference in opinions on the role that government should play in providing financial assistance to older residents. When it comes to who should be the primary person responsible for people's financial well-being in their old age, the Italians and the Germans, who have two of the oldest populations in the world after Japan, said that the government should be responsible. But Americans say families or individuals themselves should be the most financially responsible for their old age. 1 or 2 decades ago, we were thinking that the family, because of its changing form and function, was being tremendously weakened. Furstenberg said, this report suggests that intergenerational ties are very strong and they're alive and well. That's pretty cool. We're going to take a break. When we come back, Doug Hughes is going to jump in, and we're going to be talking about this retirement crisis in America, it's just this looming crisis that people aren't saving enough, and it's because a lot of these pensions and Social Security is in question. So we're in this yo-yo economy, which stands for you're on your own. When we come back, we're going to talk about why we do the things we do when it comes to money, why we make the decisions that we make, how you can identify those things and start to make those big paradigm shifts or changes. We'll be right back. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. Your Money with David Hayes. If you haven't checked it out, please go and check it out. Today's Guide to Retirement Planning, a resource for adults ages 50 and over. Myself and Doug Hughes co-authored the book. It's out on Amazon. It's on BarnesandNoble.com, all out there on the any place that the online retailers are selling books. So Doug Hughes is with me. And Doug, you know, as we talk about this show, you've been really preparing hard for quite some time. You kind of talked about behavioral finance, but really I think it boiled down to the first segment I wanted to talk about, you know, why do we do what we do when it comes to money, and how do we, you know, change those habits if they're bad?
David, why do people have such low deductibles on their insurance?
Because maybe their mom and dad had it?
Exactly.
I don't know.
We can't answer a lot of these questions. Why do so many people still keep money in the bank even though they're not making really interest? They're not losing value, but they're losing money with the cost of goods and services going up. And why are people so willing to spend so much more on something on credit than if they just paid cash? It is because we have learned a lot of behaviors that have been allowed to happen in the last, you know, 30, 40 years that just have really kind of gone unchecked. But, you know, before we go into more of this, I want to go right back to what you were talking about in the news of the week. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about this idea of parents helping out children and adult children getting help from their parents and things like that. You've been dealing with retirement planning for a long time. I have too. And really, it is one of the largest, I hate to use the word drain, but it is a drain and a strain on the overall financial plan. And as you're reading that, I thought, as we talk about behavioral finance, let's jump right into this one, because this is obviously a hot topic, with 38% of boomers saying that now they're helping out their adult children.
Yeah, and they say that 25% say they're more likely to have heightened financial anxiety than people that don't. Now, it's not that you shouldn't help your kids if they're in a pinch. I'm not saying that.
Right.
But it's the enabling that occurs. And, you know, the first time, it's maybe hard for them to ask. The second time, a little less hard. And then the third and fourth times, it just almost becomes expected that if they ask, you're going to help. Most of my experience comes from them not, meaning my clients, the folks that are retired, the mom and dad, not necessarily wanting to enable, but they worry about their grandkids. They'll say, yeah, but those babies, you know, those babies need to eat. Those babies need to do this. But, you know, it's those decisions that their parents have made, their kids, usually they're a sequence of poor decisions that have put them in a position. Now, when's enough enough? And that's a hard question to answer. But usually, you know, if it's more than two or three times that you've been giving, the question then has to fall back on you. You know, is this impacting your financial security?
Right.
And if it's, even if it's not, is it the right thing to do to continue to give, give, and give? Now, some people will say, hey, I have plenty of money. I might as well give it now, then later when I'm dead. And that actually was proven, I guess, by the survey when they said that, you know, that wealthier people are more likely to assist their grown children. Of those that assisted, they said 73% of them were higher income parents. So, you know, Doug, it's a tough one, but I know that a lot of times it just helps to talk about it. In fact, this week I was sitting down with someone. They had called to schedule the appointment. It was a longtime client. And it just said, needed to talk to you about some stuff. So I didn't prepare much. I walked in. I probably said two or three words. And all they wanted to talk about was their family situation, what was going on. And about 30 minutes into it, she says to me, oh, I'm taking up way too much of your time. I said, no, it's okay. I said, I'm good for another 30 minutes. And she says, oh, good, because I got a lot to say. But but she said, oh, you're like a therapist. I said, well, I'm half financial planner, and the other half is sometimes a therapist. And a lot of it was revolving around the kids that were, you know, getting handouts, and the husband was giving a lot of money away to the kids, and she didn't feel like they had it to give. And it's just a tough thing, but you're right. It's these habitual things that kind of come back to bite us.
And David, I don't know how it was with you growing up, but I know when I was growing up, I had limits I could spend. My mother said no at certain points. And you know, we grew up hearing our parents saying no, no, no.
I remember my mom once, I said to her, Mom, because you always say, we're broke. You know, that was the line. So, Mom, can I have this? No, we're broke. We're broke. We're broke. So one day, I guess I said to my mom, Mom, are we really broke? And she opened up the cabinet underneath the sink, and there was an 8-pack of Coca-Cola bottles.
All right.
And you remember back then, you'd exchange them, and she said, "Honey, as long as we have these Coke bottles under the sink, we're not broke. You can get like a dime apiece for them."
Well, you know, I guess the point is this, is that financial scrutiny is with us all of our lives growing up. Our parents mm-hmm. are trying to restrain and contain us all the way growing up, teaching us, you know, good disciplines. And where does, and let's roll back into behavioral finance, where does this come from? Oftentimes, David, it comes from what we know as anchoring. And anchoring is simply this: I'm anchored to a thought or a pattern I learned. Now, when did I learn it? I learned it perhaps very, very young. I watched my parents spend all the dollars that came through paycheck to paycheck, as we used to call mm-hmm. it. Or I used to see my parents gamble the money away, drink the money away, or on the other side, maybe give the money away. We've always heard the story about the family that gave too much and they didn't have enough for their own household. And when we look at how people manage their money, it almost becomes an anchor, like this is just the way you do it. And that's where behavioral finance begins, is when we look at the patterns, we learn of the patterns of the people in front of us, and that's where things come in. And quite honestly, David, we've been in this business long enough. We have had a lot of clients who are children of the mm-hmm. Depression.
Oh, yeah.
Who, where do they want their money?
They want it
in the bank,
place.
In the guaranteed place. We've also been in this business and managed money long enough to know that we have some people who have enjoyed nothing but swells of returns except for a couple of years. Where do they want their money?
In the market.
In more risky places. It all comes back to good stewardship over your resources, and actually not just good stewardship over your resources, which means where your money's invested, but good stewardship over your emotions and opinions about money. Here's the reason why. I learned this from a therapist not long ago. No matter what somebody's age is, they always have goals. They may change, but they always have goals. So much of financial planning is just based on, I'm looking at the next 30 years, or we have this retirement complex. Mm-hmm. That's all we think about, retirement. But there's a lot of things that happen between today and retirement. We're going to talk about those as we come back from our next break. But
I thought that our therapy sessions, Doug, were private. And you're
talking about that.
No, that was good. We're going to take a break, folks. When we come back, we're going to be talking about, you know, where do you go from here? Focusing on those long-term goals and what are the consequences of not doing that? Mm-hmm. And then some short-term planning as well. Because, you know, we can look forward a very long way, and a lot of us are capable of doing that and staying focused. But I can tell you that most people aren't geared that way. They need these little wins. They need these short-term goals to be met. And if you continue to meet these short-term goals over and over and over, all of a sudden you wake up one day and you've met your long-term goal. We're going to come back,
continue with
Doug Hughes on just behavioral finance. Why do we do what we do when it comes to money, and how to break some of these bad habits. We'll be back. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Hey, everyone, welcome back. You know, we're talking about behavioral finance. Why do we do the things we do when it comes to money, and how to break some of these habits? But the first thing you have to do is recognize what is wrong, because as Doug was talking about earlier in the show, that a lot of these behaviors that we have are learned, we think they're right, and we're anchored to them. But Doug, I think as we look at where do we go from here, we not only want to focus on, you know, long-term goals, and that's terrific, we want to do that, but I talked about these short-term planning, these little wins, doing the right thing every single day. It's kind of like diet and exercise. You know, when you first start, if you've not been doing it, it's not any fun. I mean, you're used to eating potato chips at night or having beer or whatever you want to do. You've lost it. But then when you start to get back in shape, at first it kind of stinks. But then once you start seeing results, you get fired up and you just can't wait to get back in there and do it again. And Doug, I think that is the pain we have to push through on some of these long-term goals, planning goals.
Absolutely, David. And you know, there's an old saying, that which is measured is done. And what we have spent a lot of time doing in our country is telling people to plan for the long-term mm-hmm. 401ks and us, but we want to spend a little bit of time talking about some of the short-term planning. And what I mean by short-term planning is the next 5 to 10 years. The reason we bring that up is because there's a lot of people who have put a lot of money in their 401ks, and that's great. We applaud that. We think you should do that and more, as much as you can, right? You need to build that nest egg mm-hmm. up. But what happens to people, and J.P. Morgan had a great piece on this in their Guide to Retirement this year, and I've talked about a lot on the path of life, and that is that when we describe that for people. And by the way, if anyone out there is listening and you'd like to go through the path of life, just give us a call, 812-334-3190. This is great for people who are in their 40s who fall into this same trap. In other words, you have this dream of long-term, 30, 40 years from now, I'm going to have $1 million, $2 million, $3 million. But David, things happen along the way, and they're short-term things. Braces, cars, refrigerators go out, all kinds of different things. And I'm not saying anything new that you haven't heard on the other debt reduction programs, but the reality is if we aren't saving for these expenses out of every paycheck, then when they come our way, where do we go?
Credit cards.
We go to credit cards and 401k loans. And these things are toxic ways to deal with short-term plans, because those short-term expenses become long-term problems. Because, you know, what we tell ourselves is, I'm always going to have this job. I'm always going to make this money. Nothing else will happen. And then we begin to think to ourselves, let's be in the minimum payment structure. Mm-hmm. And we're making minimum payments. And the next thing you know, weeks turn into months, and months, because you know you were gonna have this paid off in 6 months, turns into 12 months. 12 months turns into 18 months. And then all of a sudden we begin really paying long-term interest payments on issues that we just can't break out of.
I have a good friend, Doug, that owns a mini warehouse storage facility. And he made the statement to me that all you have to do is get them in. He said, because they'll say, I'm only going to have my stuff here for a month or two. But that third month comes around, it's easier for them to write the $80 check than it is to come down and get all their junk. Mm-hmm. And the next thing you know, it's 6 months, and then it's a year, and sometimes it rolls into 2 years. And by the time that comes around, they've forgotten what was even in the storage facility. So you're right. You kind of get down this path, and it's just, some of it's just laziness.
It's laziness, and that's why we have Storage Wars. But
which is a terrific show, by the way.
But anyway, so the reality to all of this, David, is that when we think just of long-term and we don't plan for those payments that are coming out very quickly, because I can promise everyone listening, there's things that are going to happen you don't know, but there's also things, David, you do know. For example, do you realize you were talking about Will being 14 and a half years old?
Going to high school next year.
Yeah.
Can't believe it.
Can you believe that? He's 4 years away from going to college. That's an expense that's going to hit the Hayes household in just 4 years. Now, you might not have been thinking about that, but to everyone out here who's listening in their 40s, you need 30s and 40s, you need to be thinking, if I'm going to be paying for college, what do I need to be doing now to make that a reality? And what lessons could I teach my family? Could we go out to eat less once a week and then put that money towards college planning? What can I begin to build in their behavioral finance right now? Instead of just assuming it's all going to be there, it's all going to be fine, and then you go into a daze and find out at 65 there's a problem.
Yeah, and as I was beginning to prepare kind of a talk to give around our book, Today's Guide to Retirement Planning, I've been sketching some things out in that path of life. Is something that I thought I would talk about as I was in front of people about the book. And I was reminded of a 23-year-old teacher living in an apartment, and goes into school, and her very first day, and they sign her up for the retirement plan. Automatic 3% match. So you put in 3% at least. And she says, okay. Well, then all of a sudden, she's 25. She gets married. And 27, they move out of the apartment into a little starter home, and they have a baby. And then all of a sudden, she's 30, and then her husband loses his job. I mean, and then you're 35, and then you're 40, and then you just think, oh, my gosh, I've not done anything. And it's a lack of education and a lack of awareness at a very early age to get this stuff started. But it's never too late to change your habits. I mean, I know you've heard the term, you can't teach an old dog new tricks. You can. It's just a little bit tougher.
And you know, David, let me say this. This is a phrase that you coined several years ago that if anyone out here is listening, you probably need to write this down. And if you know someone that needs this, you need to send it to them in a little card. You don't even have to put it. You can put anonymous by it if you don't want to. But we all need to make savings part of our payment plan. And that statement right there should be coined and put absolutely everywhere. Out of every paycheck that you get, you need to be saving something. We are so good at making payments, but we're just
as
not
Americans,
good at saving.
Yeah.
So when we hear the Ramseys, the Ormans, the people of the media outlets that are talking about emergency funds, this is how you do it. You just got to get it started and continue funding it, because there's never a time you don't need that kind of money in your portfolio to draw from.
People will make a quick decision to go out and lease a car or to buy a Wave Runner this time of year.
It always starts with the car, typically.
And you know, you're thinking, all right, $220 a month, $280 a month, $310. Okay, I can handle that. And then, pow, 36 months are by, and you're thinking, gosh, I need to do this again. Mm-hmm. But again, if you and you made those payments because you wanted to keep the car. You wanted to maintain your integrity with the bank. You didn't want to be embarrassed. So years ago, I wrote an article on making savings part of your payment plan and identified why it is that we're good payment makers but not good savers. And we identified all of these different traits, some of that I just mentioned. So I thought, how can you make your savings the same way? You know, how can you put yourself in a situation where you would feel obligated or embarrassed or felt like you were losing your integrity, and put together some ideas for people to make savings part of your payment plan. And then, again, eventually, just like exercise and diet, you start seeing the results, then it becomes very easy after that.
And what if you were anchored to that versus anchored to payments or anchored to poor decision-making or anchored to overspending or anchored to, you know, really running up your own cost or inflation rate because you just can't say no to things?
Yeah, and you just feel like you can't get out of it. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about debt reduction strategies. You know, if you're sitting here thinking, there's just no way I'm going to be able to get out of debt, let alone start saving, we're going to help you through some of that. And then later on, we're going to talk about some of these long-term plans and how we really need to face what is a retirement crisis in America and how you can avoid it. I remember back in 2008, the financial crisis was in full bloom, early 2009, and really what we needed was the consumer to lift their bootstraps up, not be afraid, and get out and consume, because we're in a consumer-driven economy, 70% of GDP based on consumer spending. We're driving by the mall. I look over. It was around Christmas time, completely packed. And I told my wife, that is so great, all these people out there shopping and spending money. And she said, you said that we're not supposed to spend any money at Christmas this year, at least not as much. I said, that's us. I don't care about it. That's these people. They need to spend.
We need to save.
Yeah, so that was it. We're going to take a break, folks. When we come back, we're going to talk about kind of getting out of debt and the easy steps you can take early on and make a big difference. We'll be back. This is Your Money with David Hayes. All right, attend the 2015 Real Estate Investment Expo at the Westin Indianapolis, June 5th and 6th. Tickets, you can get them online at reiexpo.com and save 15% with the promo code INDY15. That's coming up soon. If you're into real estate, you might want to check it out. Doug Hughes is my guest, co-author of the book, Today's Guide to Retirement Planning. And we're talking about, and we talk about this in the book, Doug, some, you know, good debt versus bad debt and some elimination strategies. And I know that a lot of people are like, okay, should I pay these debts off first before I start saving? Or should I go ahead and try to save while I'm paying off these debts? And that's a really good question. And I think we're both probably proponents of doing both if you have a job, because you can put money away through the paycheck. But, Doug, I think the real key here for people is how do they kind of just get this ball rolling? Because it can be a pretty daunting task.
It can be. And you know, David, our role as financial advisors, planners, whichever title we like to call one another when we're walking past each other in the hallway, it's not just debt reduction. I honestly don't spend a lot of time doing this. That's why we do things like this on the program, to be able to hand to people to say, you know, listen to this. So let's give just a couple of quick ideas.
Yeah, because, you know, we actually spend most of our time working with people who have been pretty responsible with money.
That's right.
Because, you know, they have money to invest. They work with us. And we work towards paying mortgages off before retirement,
right,
some debt elimination acceleration plans. But for the average folks, and I know this is something that we're trying to focus more on, is helping educate the younger people.
That's right. And that's why when we go right back to the very beginning of this program, that's exactly what we're trying to help people avoid is, you know, you have people who are in their 60s and they're getting ready to retire. They're retiring and they're helping their kids out. So that's why we do programs like this. So a couple of things, and these are so basic, David, so obvious, you're almost embarrassed to say them. But one is stop spending. And I know that sounds so easy, but some people just have a hard time not rewarding themselves with an extra going out to eat a week or something, a new garment or a new fishing pole or a new, you know, that would be at my house.
Get the credit cards out of your purse, cut them up. If you're worried about what if I need it for this, then you put it in a bag of ice or water, freeze it solid, put it in your freezer, you know, make it so that you have to thought out over hours before you make that decision to actually go out and swipe it.
That's right. And so let me highlight a couple of resources for people. Anyone who listens to this radio station has heard of Dave Ramsey. Most of America now has heard mm-hmm. of him. He has a great couple of books out there that you can look up and learn about the debt snowball, which is where you kind of get an emergency fund. Then you take your smallest payment and you go down, and it's a few years, you have everything paid off, and you go back up the other way. That's a great one. John Kumada is another one that's been around for several decades. There are a number of resources about debt reduction plans out there. We just recommend people pick those books up, take a look, take a read, and focus on that. And we want to help people get into that kind of framework. Because you're right, when people get to us, let's say, there are a couple things that distinguish the people. One of them is their savings rate, which we're going to talk about as we go further down the show. But the other one is where you were at in the debt cycle. Used to be a lot of people lived by this other people's money scenario, and people mm-hmm. created some great wealth with other people's money, like in real estate and business ventures and things like that, not with credit card payments that you're paying the minimum payment on every single month.
No.
You're just not going to get there that way. It just doesn't magically happen because of that. So the first thing is stop spending. The next thing is to begin a debt elimination process. A number of websites, number of resources for that. And we think that if you have those resources, there's no reason why in 2 to 3 years you could be in pretty good shape from where you're at today. It's not like this takes 10 or 15 years to do. It just takes a couple of years.
And going back to my exercise and eating right analogies from earlier in the show, I remember, I was an athlete in high school, played college football mm-hmm. For a couple of years, came back to IU, went to school, worked, played softball, stayed pretty active. But then as my career began to take off, pretty sedentary lifestyle, mm-hmm. Eating probably unhealthy, one day I woke up and I was about 50 pounds heavier than I was at my playing weight, as they said. Mm-hmm. And someone actually said to me when I said, I'm going to start exercising, I'm going to start eating right. And someone who I love dearly said to me, and it was not my wife, you're not going to do this.
It
wasn't you either. You'll never stick with that. Why are you buying that membership? Well, that gave me enough motivation, because of people mm-hmm. that know me well, all you have to say is, you can't do that. And then that's the motivation for me to show you up. And it's take me down some bad paths in the past, but that's yeah, my characteristics. Well, it took basically 15 years to put on all this weight, and I was laughing one time, and I said, if I continue on this path, by the time I'm 60, I'll be 300 pounds. Well, it only took about 2 years to get it all leaned mm-hmm. down and to start, getting back into what I would say my playing weight. Now, I couldn't go out and play today, mm-hmm. but it doesn't take as long as you think.
That's right.
And that's really the key to this. It's not, it looks insurmountable. It looks like you'll never get over that mountain of debt, mm-hmm. but it's not that bad if you can put these little plans together.
David, there's another old, I'm full of old sayings.
Yes, you are. And puns.
I've been all my life. And puns. There's another old saying that says that habits will always beat inspiration. And when we look at the way we get inspired, you could listen to me, you could listen to David, you could listen to any number of people who can inspire you about being debt-free or being financially fit or mm-hmm. having financial freedom. But you know what? You can go from tape to tape to conference to, even the infomercial by the infomercial mm-hmm. programs, just like all the, exercise and diet pills and this, that, and the others you want to. All the inspiration in the world, though, won't beat good quality habits. So how do we learn and anchor, going back to the beginning, right, to good financial habits? And I want to say to anyone out there listening, it's not too late to get these good habits started. I mean, that's the beauty of this, right? I mean, you can take a look, because what is measured is done. Take a look at where you're at, measure where you're at and where you want to be, what you can do, and just begin good habits. Not easier to say than harder to do. But
and here's a trap, too, before we have to take a break, that I see people run up against over and over and over. Okay, so the life cycle of spending. You're young, you get married, you have kids. You're never more broke than the day after you have your first child. Then you had number two. Then you moved up to a home that you just had to have. And you had to get that car. Then all of a sudden, your kids are in high school, you're in your peak spending years, you're making pretty decent money. Then they move into college, and you're just like, how in the heck are we ever going to get through this? You finally get through it. You're making the most money of your life. You're in your mid-50s. The kids have started to leave the home. Hopefully, you're not supporting them, like we talked about earlier in the program. And instead of doing what you should be doing, which is paying down your debts and saving like a wild person, and you can because you have all this extra disposable income, all of a sudden, and trust me, I've done all of this stupid stuff. You want the granite countertops. I get it. You want that new sports car or that motorcycle. I get it. And sometimes you have to get through that urge, and you're like, I deserve this, and you do it. But then all of a sudden, that Florida vacation that you used to take once a year, now you're spending a full month or whatever. I mean, you're just doing stuff that you wouldn't have ever done 10 years ago when the kids were at home because you had all this necessary spending and you didn't have the money. You really don't want to get trapped into this lifestyle change. It's fun. It's hard to go back once you got there. So I'm just warning people that if you're in your early 50s, you're making good money, your kids are starting to leave the house, and you're starting to see the light at the end of the tunnel, this is the time to sit down and say, okay, this is what we got to do. We got to start paying extra on our house payment. We need to start putting maximum in our 401k plans. We need to make these habits right now, because otherwise you'll wake up, you're 60, 65, you're enjoying this tremendous lifestyle that you simply cannot replace in retirement because you don't have enough money. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to start focusing on some of these long-term planning goals and what you should do, and really what the poor people think about money, what the middle class think about money and how they save, and what the upper class and rich folks do when it comes to saving and investing. We'll be right back. This is Your Money with David Hayes. You know, welcome back, everyone. We've been trying to talk a little bit on behavioral finance. Why do we do the things we do when it comes with money, and how do you change bad habits? Excuse me. And, you know, we're going to focus on some long-term planning. And the real key here is that people aren't educated. I don't think that they don't want to do it. I just don't think they've ever been shown how to do it. And, you know, I've been involved in a few strategic planning meetings with companies and some municipalities, and I've been encouraging them to take a stance and to do the right thing for the people. Unfortunately, you know, I look back to the smoking ban here in Monroe County, and at the time I was like, you know what? I hate when people tell people what to do. I don't smoke. I hate being around smoke. But you know what? When Wee Willie's was still open, I enjoyed going there and not have to breathe that secondhand smoke. And then when the seatbelt law came along, you got to wear your seatbelt. I wore my seatbelt at the time, and I thought, you know, if some dummy doesn't want to wear a seatbelt, why does he have to? Now, granted, you want to make sure the kids have theirs on. I get that. But you know what? It saved hundreds of thousands of lives, I'm sure. And I look back and think, you know what? I was probably wrong on those things. That maybe it was the right thing to do. So when it comes to mandating something, what I figured out is that people are just ignorant and they don't know what they don't know. So if they don't know that they should have their seatbelt on, they shouldn't smoke, then maybe they won't wear their seatbelt and maybe they're going to smoke. But what about saving? If you walk into a job and you said, you know what? Part of your job or part of your employment package is we sign you up automatically for a 15% deferral into the retirement account, and they just go with it. I could almost, and I can't say this word on the show very often, guarantee that people 20, 30 years from now will look back and say, wow, I have a lot of money. And it's because they did nothing more than saved. And it was because someone mandated it. I really think that's what we have to do in this country, is start to make a stance. And the reason that we have 3% and 3% matches is because everybody else has been doing it. And that's just the way it's always been done. So, Doug, there is a retirement crisis happening here in America. Social Security is in question. You know, by the year 2033, 70 cents of every dollar promised will be paid unless changes are made, and changes will be made. It's going to come in means testing. If you have the means, you won't get as much. Mm-hmm. And two, we're going to have some age extensions, no question about it. Maybe the Social Security cap for taxable wages will increase. Pension plans, pretty much a thing of the past. If you have one, you're lucky. And if you have one, even now as a new worker, it's probably pretty puny. So you're on your own. You have to start saving. And again, there's no federal mandates, no state mandates, no plan mandates out there at this point, unless we can change that to make it happen. So you got to know it, and you got to do it.
Let's go back to the Matthew Greenwald survey that's done every single year, and the number hovers right between 37 and 39%. How many people spent more time planning their vacation or leisure time last year than they did on their retirement planning?
Probably just about everybody.
We're anchored to the fact that we just put money in and give the match, the minimum, whatever we need to do, and we just, out of sight, out of mind, we don't even think about it. People aren't planning. They all know what they want, great returns. They all know they're uncomfortable when the market goes down and the risk is high. But people aren't focusing on what my savings rate should be.
Well, and lack of savings in retirement accounts is one of the big hurdles that you have to get over. Reaction to market movements as well is something you got to avoid. In fact, I have a tale of two sisters that worked at the same place, mm-hmm. made the same amount of money practically. One worked in the office, one worked on the plant floor. one of them in the office changed her investments all the time, reacting to these market movements, thinking, I'm going to move here, I'm going to move there. What do you think? What do you think? The other one never thought anything about it. They were in that lifestyle fund, 40, 20, 45, or whatever. And guess what? At the end of the day, when they both retired, one of them had $80,000 more than the other one. And who was it? It wasn't the one that was in there moving it around all the time.
Right.
It was the one that said it and forget it, a good Ron Popeil.
David,
quote.
I met with someone just this week. And
it's a little obscure.
A little obscure. I met with someone just this week who we celebrated our 10th anniversary in May of working together.
Mm-hmm.
Wonderful young couple, started out with just a couple $1,000s. But as life has moved down the track, they had some life insurance, but as life has moved down the track, they made some modest contributions, a rollover, a job change here, a job change there. Next thing you know, we're sitting down looking at a piece of paper that has more than six digits on it. And I just have to say that these are the kind of patterns, these are what successful people are doing. They're paying attention. They have some guidance. They have someone kind of giving them some ideas about different ways to manage risk and to manage savings rates. These are success stories, and these are the things we're looking for out here to describe to people today. There's nothing wrong with having some guidance and putting some guardrails on your plan. Because of that guardrails, David, we get awfully swervy.
Yeah, and I had a good friend of mine, his wife, I met with them last week, and they were friends first, childhood friends, of course, clients now too. And we were talking about the same success stories. I mean, you know, I'm 45 years old, so all my friends are in their mid to upper 40s. And, you know, $300,000 or $400,000 were saved by this point.
Sure.
And we were talking about, you know, the humble beginnings and when they got started. And he said to me, do you remember when you came over to my shop and you know, I brand new, 1993, 1994, and said, you need to put $50 a month into this fund.
Mm-hmm.
He said, did I have $50 a month? No. He said, but I didn't want to tell you no because you're my friend.
There you go.
And as time went on, I would encourage him to ump it to 75 and then 100 and 125. And every time, for the most part, they would do that. Well, there were many times he said where he was like, gosh, that money's going to come out of my checking account again. I don't really have it. I need to call David. But he wouldn't call because he's like, I don't want to call him. I'm just going to let it happen. I'll maybe not pay this thing until next week. And then all of a sudden you wake up and you're 45, 46 years old. And instead of having zero, which you would have had, you have over, you know, almost $500,000.
Exactly.
So these success stories can happen not just to these, quote, fictional people who are real, but it can happen to you.
David, when you're 45 years old, if you plan to work till you're 65 and you get paid 26 times a year, that is bimonthly, you have 520 paychecks to get it worked out.
All right, Doug, that's pretty depressing.
That's the kind of stuff we want to describe to people out here. Because most retirement planning that is done traditionally assumes the house is paid off, that college is paid off, you have this lump sum, and you're just living on the dividends and interest. These are the kind of discussions that people really need to be having. And the behavior is this. If it's too tough or it's going to dig into my lifestyle, as you mentioned, I'm going to step away from it and hope for the best.
But this time
more than ever, you're on your own.
You're on your own. Let's talk a little bit about how the poor folks think, how the middle class think, upper middle class and rich people think when it comes to saving.
Mm-hmm.
Because I, you know, and not to be degrading, but I used to have this saying that, hey, you're thinking like a poor person. And it could be in a variety of situations, but you're thinking like a poor person. You know, you got to think bigger. You got to think more, you know, creative
and
constructive.
You said that to me a few times.
Well, that's in our private therapy sessions
right.
I was talking
exactly.
about earlier. So, Doug, let's talk a little bit about this. These thinkers more
okay.
than the classification of poor, middle right. upper, and upper middle class.
And who knows what those numbers really
are? Yeah,
anyway.
Who knows?
So when we talk about people, there's a certain amount of people who say to themselves, "Someday."
Mm-hmm.
Someday I'll get started.
I'll start next year.
As soon as I get this paid off, I'll get that. And because they haven't made savings part of their payment plan to have an emergency fund or anything to pull back on, their behavior causes them not to ever get to that someday.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of people who, you know, good intentions, right?
Yeah, and that's the person that when they're 65, 68, they're still working, not because they want to, but because they have to. The middle class, and this is for a lot of people around here, Doug will say, I've saved 5 to 10%, and that will create a middle class environment for most people if you have Social Security and if you have a pension. But if you really want to be in that upper middle class, those percentages start to change pretty drastically.
10% must be the minimum, and you go up from there. If you want to have a very nice sized nest egg out there.
And then you're hoping for a match with from your employer on top of that, a you know, 5% match to get you to 15 or really even 20% is where you need to be.
That's right. 15 to 20%, you're gonna retire with a large nest egg to retire with. Some of your worries are going to go away as long as you have it moderately invested. Mm-hmm. But 15 to 20%, 20% or more, those are the kind of numbers that really accelerate people to where they want to be. John Templeton, who was the founder of one of the great mutual fund companies, he and his wife, when they moved to New York City, they lived on 50% of their income from day one. Now, we don't know many people like this, but 50% of their income from day one. He always attributed his great opportunities in life to be because he just lived on 50% of his income. Mm-hmm. David, a great book that we've talked about on this radio program before, The Two Income Trap. In this country, most households are based, and spending patterns, debts, loans that you're able to take out are based on two incomes, not one. And that's where we've come to the point where we don't have people saving 20 to 50% anymore because we're in a two-income trap environment.
That's right.
Now,
we're going to take another break, come back, kind of wrap up the show with some inspirational comments from our own Doug Hughes. And if we have time, we're going to beat on a couple of other radio media types that sometimes give bad information if we have time. And this was kind of like on my maybe list to talk about, so I might not get to it. But we'll see. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Whether you're listening to the show on Thursday nights at 6 or Saturday mornings at 9, my favorite time, or on WGCLradio.com, we sure hope you've enjoyed the program. If you caught just a little bit of it and you'd like to go back and hear some more, you can always catch it right on WGCLradio.com shortly after the Thursday night run. Our buddy Jim, the producer, does an outstanding job of throwing it up online. Occasionally I check to see if it's up. Sometimes I don't. Last week I did, and we had the wrong show running, and then we had to fix it. So it was kind of cool, but hey, things like that happen. Doug Hughes has been my guest. We've been talking about behavioral finance. And Doug, I know there's a couple of quotes, and again, you're the king of quotes, king of puns, that I thought, you know, you might want to share with people just to kind of drive this point home about having habits and creating good habits and why we do the things we do when it comes to money. And some of it, most of it, is learned behaviors. And I love the one about what you do in moderation.
It's, again, an old saying, and the old saying goes like this: what you do in moderation, your children will do in excess. And so for anyone who's out there listening, who just has listened to what we've had to say, and you just know you have some behaviors, the good news is there's plenty of resources out there to kind of get you on the right track. There are people that you can talk to. There are resources that you can purchase, plenty of online calculators, just different things like that. But also, I have to throw a quote out to our good friend Wayne Thacker, who has said on this program before, don't forget, folks, money doesn't grow on trees. It does grow like trees. Folks, if you have 20 to 30 years, 10 to 15 years, 5 years to plan for your retirement, give
Place
us a call.
Seeds now. Wayne's give us head a call. Has gotten bigger already. We'll
Absolutely.
See y'all next
it's
week.
A great
Goodbye.
Quote.
Discussions in this show should not be construed as specific recommendations or investment advice. Guest opinions on this show do not necessarily represent those of the radio station, David Hayes, or CFCI. You should always consult with an investment professional before making important investment decisions. Investment advice offered through CFCI, an SEC registered investment advisor, 674 South College Avenue, Bloomington, Indiana.